Last week, it was discussion went in every direction. We're not doing that this week. This week, I actually have notes that I'm going to be following, actual bullet points. So that's really rare for me. So I'm going to be going boom, 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 boom. Let's review. This is part three of a four-part series. Okay. Part one, the overall series for this four-part series is how to train a submissive. Okay, just from my own bias, from my own perspective, based on decades and decades of experience. Tonight, the topic is training. It's also known as tour of the toy bag. So we're going to be doing that a lot. We're going to be handing things around and admiring things up close. A lot of it's real fun. It's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. I'm going to be doing an awful lot of specifics tonight. Normally, I don't do specifics. I'm very airy-fairy. I bounce off the satellites. I drift from point to point. Tonight, it's going to be a lot more focused, like I said. So let's talk about the whole point of training. Okay. If I'm working with somebody, I work with beginners a lot. I'm assuming when I talk to people about this sort of stuff, that they're also looking to train beginners. But what they never really want to admit is that most of us are beginners on some topic or another. The training goes in both directions. So the bottom can train the sir. We see a lot of nodding heads here, like, well, yeah. Because the problem is, as I've said before, is that dominant males are supposed to already know. But where are we going to learn? If we don't have enough daddies to teach, you know, that old phrase, even daddies need daddies, then a lot of guys are kind of bullshitting their way through life, you know, trying to substitute hyper-macho behavior for actually knowing how to connect, how to enroll somebody into stepping way beyond their normal limits. The whole point of training is to get somebody to really expand their experience, to push the envelope, to develop deeper intimacy, to have greater heights of ecstasy, to have pleasure without drugs so that it is the best it can possibly be. You know, the sort of stuff that's epic, that, you know, you see each other 40 years later and high-five each other because it was so good. It's a different viewpoint than just getting your rocks off. Okay? Okay, let me see. The whole point of why I started out in this series with getting to trust with a capital T, which was heavily inlaid, if you listen to the audio, with intimacy as a concept. A lot of people are afraid of kinky stuff. They're afraid of kinky tops. I'm a big, scary-looking guy. One of my favorite forms of play is size disparity play. And people go, eh? You know, they're not sure what the hell that means. Question marks appear over people's heads. Well, I'm 6'5", standing fully erect. I'm 270 pounds, and most of the guys that I encounter, that I play with, I can pick up. I can gently lay them in the sling. I can lay on top of them while they're face down and squish them. You know, while I'm mounting them, rah, and biting them, and, you know, having a lot of fun with them, and they can barely breathe because of all this weight on them, and they're deeply, deeply turned on as a result. Well, in order for me to be able to do that without them calling the police, I have to establish the fact that I'm really a nice guy. I'm just having a lot of fun with them. Okay, so again, trust matters. A lot of guys that I play with, they don't even know what the questions are. Welcome. They don't have the vocabulary because a lot of the stuff out there is just too darn scary, or their friends say, oh, no, you don't want to go to the Eagle. They'll drag you aside and rape you. I mean, I get that stuff. I'm not kidding. People really do pull that. Say, oh, no. You know, it's usually Twinkie boys assuring each other that the leather thing is the bad thing and they should stay the hell away from it. So they're terrified of it. My job is to get people past that fear and to invite them to the next level. For instance, what happened last night? What I did, as I brought people through all four levels at the Eagle. We did hands-on demo. By the way, that's probably the last night we'll be having hands-on demos at the Eagle. We're going to be shifting to a Pilates studio over in Hillcrest, if all goes well. It's about twice the size of this space, and it won't be so noisy, it won't be so dark, and it won't be so likely that we're going to have random drunks come up and drop their pants expecting us to do something with them. Okay. So, I mean, we... Yeah, really? And that's always welcome. You know, it's on the list. Okay. But what I did, new guy shows up. And he's starting to get into this kinky stuff. He has himself a 20-year vanilla relationship with another man. And he likes to wear leather. But he's being real in the closet about it. He's going through midlife crisis, in my opinion. Normal. Back in the days before the internet, approximately 90% of the men who joined up with the leather community did so at the age of about 39 and up when they hit midlife crisis. Getting back to what I've said before, probably not recorded, but we spend our entire adult lives, starting from puberty, trying to make everybody else happy. But then when we go through a perfectly natural passage in life as males, where we suddenly say, wait a second, I can see the day coming when I don't have quite so much pretty left, and that people might turn away, you know, when I walk in the room instead of turn towards. So if I'm going to have some fun, I better do it soon. Okay, so that's why midlife crisis is so important. And that's when a lot of guys say, you know, I'm tired of hiding the kink thing. I think it's time for me to quit wearing leather and start living leather. And that's what the phase this gentleman is going through. And so then he showed up and he was shy and he was absolutely not interested in this flogging stuff. He just wanted to wear gear. By the end of the evening, he was saying, next time we get together, I really want to do this. I really want to do this. Well, it didn't happen at random. I had to work him through the phases. I had to establish trust. I had to establish, which is basically a commonality, letting them know that I'm authentic. No bullshit would pass my lips while I would talk to him. I wasn't trying to impress him. I was just letting him know what's going on. I explained clearly and absolutely transparently. I started finding out more about him, started investing in getting to know him as a human being. I started teaching him by demonstrating on other people. Beautiful exhibit A over here. Thank you. Beautiful assistant. And he got to see me in action, and he went, huh, that's not what I thought it was at all. And then I had exhibit A explain to him what it was like for him. And all of this resistance to all of this zany, crazy, kinky, wild-ass stuff suddenly went, oh, I can relate to that. The next step that's coming up is where he gets to try it, and he gets to enjoy it, and we're going to be doing that as a private date first at some point. You know, we're working through that right now. We're negotiating that. But the point is that when it happens, he's going to be so gratified and so pleased, and that's not bragging. It's just a fact. I know how to play it. But my intention for doing this sort of talking is to help others start setting their goals. Since a lot of people are going to be listening to the audio version of this, and I'm going to have pictures included of the stuff that I'm going to be handing around. What was that? Okay, if somebody's got their phone dingers going, could you please turn them off? Thank you. Okay, so getting back to this. So we're going to talk about basic stuff. If I'm negotiating with somebody and I'm in the process of training them about all this kinky stuff, of course we're going to do the safe word thing. I'm going to say, you have control. It's not just me doing things at you and you being the helpless little victim. You have a vote. And the way that you express that vote, the way that you take responsibility for your own well-being and your own safety is that you tell me if things aren't working and here's how you do it. I'll teach them green, yellow, red. Okay? Yellow means I don't want the scene to stop, but I need to take a break. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, but I want to keep going. Red means this stops now. I'm done. I'm hating this. I hate you. I'm going to tell all my friends what a horrible person you are. And in my experience, my direct experience with me, green means, Papa Tony, would you please stop talking so much? I'd like to play now. Okay. Okay, one of the things that I like to, I thought you'd like that. It's an old one, but it's one of my own. One of the things I like to do with somebody if they're in private with me, and they're shy, and they're very nervous because they have all sorts of stereotypes romping around in their brains, is that I'll have them strip down completely and then stand with their feet apart, you know, with their hands behind their back, and I'll inspect them. Why am I doing this? Everyone has body dysmorphism. It's rampant in the gay men's community. We're afraid that we're displeasing because we're not hairy enough, we're not trim enough, we're not hung enough, we're not young enough, we're not whatever. Blah, blah, blah. My job as the top is to convince him he's fine the way he is, that he is the way that I choose him. What I'm doing is I'm reassuring that part of his brain that's running wild. I'm consciously inspecting him and saying, ooh, this is nice. I like this. One thing I do not do is any kind of negative feedback. Am I bullshitting him? No, I am not. I'm just letting go of any sort of concerns about, you know, he needs to go to the gym for at least 4 months before he'll be acceptable. Fuck that. What if we just like each other the way we are now? What if we choose each other the way that we are now? It's a different viewpoint, and it's deeply reassuring to a submissive. It's one of the nicest things I do to break the ice with them. Because he's expecting me to do something wild and unusual. Well, that's pretty damn wild and unusual to have him stand there naked while I'm dressed. And I'm inspecting him. I'm feeling the merchandise. I'm praising this. I'm telling him what I like about that. I admire the fact that he's got a nice broad back. For, you know, it makes it really easy for us to aim when we're throwing the flogger around. I'll explain why I really like this about him. And I'm reassuring that wild little animal in his brain that's trying to run rampant. Okay? One of the things that I do, if I'm planning to play with a man, a lot of the time I want to have sexual intercourse with him, and a lot of guys really don't know how to douche properly, and so then I will teach them. Okay? It's not crucial, but part of it is because it's a bit of a mind fuck. By my being there with him while he's douching, he's unsure about this. He's really unsure. What the hell's going on? He's in the room with me, and I'm spewing out poop. You know, like, is he into this? And I'm clearly not. And I'll tell him, you know, this doesn't make my dick hard. But if we're going to be intimate, we're going to be intimate. And that it has to be okay for us to just be with each other, no matter what the circumstances are, plus, minus, the whole experience. Oh, okay. So that's part of my training. That's what I like to do. If I'm playing with his butt, because I am a butt hound, it's what I do. I'm a butt hound. And what I like to do is I like, as I said last week, I like to make sure that my nails are smooth. The way that you check to see whether your nails are smooth or not, you smooth them down, and then you stick your finger into your mouth and lick it with your tongue. Why? Because your tongue is the same sensitivity as the tender flesh inside somebody's butt. If it feels rough to your tongue, now you're not going to feel it with the thick calluses on your fingers, but if you feel it with your tongue, ooh, something sharp, then you know to fix that. Okay, if I'm playing with the man's butt, again, reminding him, I have multiple purposes for sticking my finger because it's thinner, and then finally my thumb before anything else goes inside of him. The reason why, I'm checking to see if he's lubed enough. Back in the old days, we had the joke that it's not enough lube unless it's dripping off the ceiling. Because if I'm wearing somebody out early, they're not going to think of it as a good experience. They're going to see it as a chore to have to deal with things. Okay? But if I'm playing with them, I'm making sure that they're properly cleaned out so that they can be relaxed. Their butt's going to be more relaxed where, like I said, there's a bundle of nerves at the base of the spine that keeps you from pooping while you walk. Well, if there's poop up there, you're going to be tense. And you just get around that by cleaning that out. But what I'm also checking, like I said, is where his prostate is. It's very important. It's good reference for later on. I'm checking to see which direction his butt goes, because everybody's physiologically different. Some people it angles down, some people it angles up, some people, you know, whatever. Some people have the second sphincter maybe about 4 inches in, some people it's like 11 inches in. You're not going to know until you find out. Some people have a pubic bone right there, directly in, that you have to angle past. There's all sorts of physiological differences. A lot of people don't know. But your innards are not cemented in place. If you've ever seen those extreme fisting videos where some skinny guy you know, with a 24-inch waist, is taking an arm all the way up to the armpit. You're thinking, where the hell is he putting it? His insides rearranged. They do that. Okay? Why is this important? Because my intention is to train someone to have a receptive ass. What that means is can take a cock of any size without pain, without stretching, instant relaxation. I'll talk more about how to get to that, but first I have to tell a really cheesy joke. I was at the gym about 20 years ago. It was in the days when you could get those FM radio headphones that had the antenna that dropped away the, you know, long wire. And so then this buddy of mine at the gym was wearing these headphones and had this wire running down to the crack of his ass and disappearing inside of his shorts. And I said, what is that? He says, oh, that's the FM antenna. I said, you know, everybody had told me that you had a receptive ass, but I thought that meant something else. Okay, ba-ding, ba-dum. Okay. Anyways, but the whole point of a receptive ass, again, I alluded to this last week. I'm going to be a lot more detailed. If someone is tense, where their butt's going to go eek when they fart, it's because they don't trust what's going on. Also, it's because they have no idea how to relax, because they don't understand how to control the muscles. The example I always give has to do with getting something in your eye. If you get a piece of grit in your eye, ow, 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 get it out, ow, 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 then you draw an automatic unconscious lesson from this. Don't let anything in your eye. It's going to hurt. Which means that 15 years later, when you get your first set of contact lenses, it takes you an hour to get the damn contact lens in because you're so afraid. And then after a while, you get comfortable with it, and you just slap them in, you know, in half a second, ba-doom, ba-doom, ba-doom. But you had to learn to trust, okay? But you had to learn the hard way. You didn't have a mentor, and a contact lens mentor saying, it's okay, do this. Well, what we're doing is we're cutting past all the time wasting and getting to actual training with somebody who is saying, it's okay. You have my word of honor that I will never hurt you. That any time I ever play with your ass, it will only be pleasant. And there will never be any pain. There will never be any bleeding. There will never be any discomfort. It's just going to be fun. Well, that's quite a declaration to make. By putting my ass on the line, it means I have to be a man of my word. And so then if they're tense and they're unsure and they don't know how to relax their butt, it's because at some point they got hurt. Somebody fucked them and they said never again. Out of the 19 or so, I believe, 19 collared boys that I've had and one slave, I would say over half of them were tops who would never allow anybody near their ass. And I trained every damn one of them how to be complete butt piggies. Because they were starving for somebody to reassure them, to tame them, to train them, to get them to their birthright. It is every man, not just gay, not just leather, but every man's birthright to find out just how wonderful his ass is. Really. That's why so many straight guys are starting to get their asses played with. God help them if they hook up with a woman with long... But anyways... The point is that when I am training somebody's butt, I'm using only positive reinforcement. It's called operant conditioning, where you ignore the stuff that doesn't work right, and you get to the positive stuff, where, let's say, I'm playing with somebody's butt, and they're as tight as a drum. And so then I'll say, okay, this next part, I need you to breathe me in. Not quite, almost there. There you go, there it is. I do not push past resistance, ever. Because that means tension, that means stress, that means ow. But if they relax, then what I do is that I train them at that point. I'm getting them trained to relax. They don't know how to control the outer sphincter. They don't know where the switch is in their brain. Just like last week when I sort of vaguely mentioned nostril flaring. I can flare my nostrils. I can wiggle my eyebrows alternating. I can wiggle my ears. I can do the Spock finger thing. I can do all sorts of crazy stuff. I did that because I played with it as a kid over and over again, and now I know where those switches are. Once I know, you know, forever. Well, that's the same with your butthole. You know, either If your only experience with sexual intercourse up your ass is feeling like you're shitting rose bushes the morning afterwards because it hurts, then you're not going to be very receptive to that happening again in the future because it means negative feedback. But if I'm only doing positive feedback, if I'm playing with him and I'm rewarding him for relaxing by playing with his prostate and saying, okay, now grab your dick, make it feel good, just ride on it. I mean, come on, do whatever it takes to make it feel good. And he's thrusting on it, he's going, oh yeah, and his dick's getting harder. And I say, okay, leave your dick alone. And then I'll pull out and then I'll do it again. I'll go inside and I'll say, okay, I'm doing it again. Now go ahead and go for it. And then I'll stop. And then just basically, they're getting used to me going in quicker and quicker each time without any pain. And I will point it out to them. I will say, notice that the first time we tried this, it was really difficult and it was really agonizing and all that. And here it is only half an hour later and you're taking it like a champion. If I had a trophy, I'd hand it to you right now. You know? Positive reinforcement. What I'm doing is I'm teaching them how to just give in and relax, which is what people are really looking for, especially guys, as we all know, we could all tell stories of the, you know, the CEO in charge of 600 people who just wants to submit for God's sake because their life is, their pendulum's been stuck in one extreme for a long time and they really need it to swing in the other direction. Well, that's true for a lot of people, but there's also people, as we all know, who are naturally inclined to want to submit. This is natural. This is part of nature. In the animal world, there are rats, male rats, who want to be mounted. There are female rats who want to mount. It is part of nature. Some people are just wired that way. Some people are natural pass-around party bottoms, and I say, thank goodness for them. And it's not aberrational. It's just natural, and it's wired in. So getting back to the notes, what I do with different people is that I work on whatever it is that they have a natural tendency towards. I'm always paying attention to that. Having decades of experience gives me a bit of an advantage on the topic. You know, I've had enough experience that when I gently run my fingers along somebody's sides and they go, oh, and I go, oh, there's one. Ooh, I know what to do with that. What I do with that is that I'm always looking for what somebody's natural tendencies are, as I said. If I'm finding out, like I said last week, that they find out that their nipples are directly attached to their dick, or that they're very sensitive in different areas of their body, or they're completely insensitive, then I know, or they're really hostile to it, like these nipple piercings are recent, you don't go anywhere near them, you have to make allowances for that because you don't want them punching you in the middle of the scene. You really don't. You know, it's not good for top points. But what I'm doing is that I'm testing them in all sorts of different ways, not as in pass or fail, but as in getting to know them better as an individual, because everybody's got different buttons, everybody's got different hang-ups, everybody's got different mind fields inside of them that, you know, you can accidentally step on. We've talked about those. But what they all have in common is that they really, really want to just drop the shields, because we've got enough reasons. We've got a whole long, long list of reasons why we should not trust. We could all tell a lot of stories. And they'd be very good logical reasons, but fuck logic. Sometimes what you need is to just drop the shields and go for the gold, which is the topic for next week. Okay. If I am teaching somebody about, let's say, flogging, like I did last night, like I've done. Okay, show of hands, how many people here have been flogged by me? It's a good number of people. You know, somewhere close to 40, 50% of the people. And show of hands, how many people here did not like it? 0%. Okay. But my word to you guys is that every single one of them is different in his own special way. Every single one of them has a different way to be approached. As a sensitive man, the way that I describe it is that I have superhero class intuition. Not everybody does. So my job is to give away a lot of the secrets. That's what tonight is about. What I do, what I did last night, is that I would start playing with somebody. I would reassure them that this is a good thing. I wait for them to approach me. I generally don't go up to people and say, your turn. See, what I do is that I watch for the zone. This is a term that I invented, and it's very easy to understand once you know what it is. If I'm, let's say, the day after tomorrow is the harness party. Guaranteed, I will be there with floggers, and I will be putting on quite the show. But so how do I get so many beginners? The reason why is because if I start demonstrating on one person, and I clearly know what I'm doing, and I clearly care about the person, and I clearly do great aftercare, well, then I look around as soon as I'm done with that person, and I look. Somebody is close enough where they're not going to get hit by the flogger, but no further away than that. And they're looking at me with big eyes, the size of pie plates. And what they're really communicating is, oh, please choose me. Please convince me. I'm dying to be asked. But they're too shy to ask the big, scary top. And I'll come up to them and I say, would you like to try it? Me? Yes, you. Okay. You know, that's fine. They're welcome to have whatever, you know, logic they can have about it. But the fact of the matter is they wouldn't be standing there with their butthole snapping like castanets if they weren't ready for some fun. Okay? Yes. You're like, oh, you're easy tonight. I love that. Oh, we found his funny bone. I'm going to be using that on you next time we play. Okay, so, yeah, really. Anyway, so getting back to it. So if somebody is coming up to me and they're using their body language, even though they're not sure how to ask, but they can't not do it. They can't look away. They can't restrain themselves from being magnetically attracted and vulnerable and just please, please, please. So then what I do is that I then reassure them. What I do is that I tell them, I need you to understand what this is about. This is not about damage. This is not a pirate movie where you get, you know, tied to the mast and lashed until you're bloody. It's not like that at all. I said, I can flog a complete albino with the fairest skin that exists. And after I'm done, 20 minutes afterwards, there won't be the slightest bit of pink on his back. Really? Because they're expecting damage. They're expecting marks. We'll talk more about marks shortly. But for a beginner, I don't do marks. I use only thud with beginners. I use the softest flogger. I use gentle techniques. I'm not trying to beat the crap out of them. My interest with beginners is to reassure them. Whatever type of play it is, I want to reassure them that they're on a good path. I'm not going to pull out the single tail with the beginner. Ain't going to happen. That's an advanced play, and we don't do that with beginners. What we do instead is that we reassure, we touch. I'm communicating with him on three levels, okay, with this shy, anxious beginner. One, using words to reassure his logical mind. Two, physical touch. When I'm in physical contact with somebody, I use non-threatening touch. Non-threatening touch means I'm not going to immediately go for his nipples and do the pliers on him. I'm not going to be growing for his dick. I'm not going to be grabbing for his ass. And, you know, I'm not going to be a creep. Later on, I can do that once we've established, you know, trust. But for the initial thing, I'm defusing a bomb here. What I'm doing by using what I call the daddy touch, where I touch the top of the neck like this. I touch the chest in the middle. I scratch the middle of the back. I'm talking to him and I'm explaining that what this is about is creating a conflict between the two major portions of the human brain, oversimplifying. The logical portion of the brain, which needs to be reassured, and what we call the lizard brain. You guys that have played with me, you've all gotten the speech. The lizard brain is the part that pumps out the endorphins. If I'm patting on his back, he's not feeling particularly threatened by this. He could fall asleep with me doing this. Logically, he's okay with it, so that's fine. But deep down, his lizard brain's going, holy shit, fight or flight, and it's squirting out endorphins like a faucet. So what's the point? Endorphins are a natural high. When you're endorphinated, the problems of the world go away. And you get a really dopey look on your face because all the muscles in your face relax. Thank you. An endorphinated man is an intimate man. a relaxed and a happy man, a trusting man. In order for him to get to that place, we have to defuse the bomb. We have to unlock the combination lock. We have to train him. We have to reassure him. We have to make sure that he gets a wonderful time. The reason why, speaking as an ethical top, I know that I have to undo damage in a lot of cases. Somebody got beaten as a child, or somebody saw a really horrifying, scary movie about Leatherman and he's afraid, or he got to play with somebody who had absolutely no responsibility for what happened. Well, my job is to reassure them that, we're not all that way. My job is to be the guy that introduces him to a whole new world so that, frankly, if it was just me and him, then that would be fine, but it's me and him and him and him and him and him and him in this room. It's a way of building commonality and trust and brotherhood in a community for us to play with each other. That's what last night was about. It's about us playing together like happy children. That's a weird thing to say. You know, we're Butch Leatherman. You know? The problem is that sometimes we need to just let go of that and be like happy children together. And that's the energy that you saw in the room as you were walking in, you strange, new, shy people, Antonio. You got to see everybody glad and swarming around each other like happy butterflies. Well, it doesn't happen randomly. It happens because it's a conscious process that all of us are going through, of learning to trust, of learning to just relax. What we're really being for each other over the long term is the people who catch each other because we want to. I'm just giving a little speech there for our new people. Getting back to the main topic. Thank you. Very good slave. Good slave. Oh, yeah. Glasses, too. Thank you. Bit of a delay here. Thank you. Good slave. Okay, one of the things that I like to do with somebody who is jumpy, who thrashes, who is way reactive, so you like to use restraints. Now, you can go to any place on the internet, Google restraints, there they are. But I'm not talking about the usual ones. You can get to those. Yeah. What I'm talking about is inexpensive stuff that you can do. You know, if you want typical hold them down type restraints because somebody that really turns them on, that's a blessing. That's a good thing. I'm all for that. I got a ton of those. One of my favorite restraints that I use that are typical, are in the typical style, is karate belts. I have a bunch of them because I did a lot of karate classes. Karate belts don't cut off the circulation, but they're very tough. They're very, very hard to get out of. But they don't. They're just the right width. They're the right softness. They're wonderful. So I tend to keep those tied, one on each corner of the bed. It's very nice for keeping somebody spread eagled. But I tend to like to do mind fuck type restraints. Okay, one toilet paper restraint. This one's nasty. Doesn't cost anything. I mean, everybody's got toilet paper, right? Well, the whole idea is, let's say I've got some beefy, you know, corn-fed, you know, hungry and pleasing, you know, ready to get, be pleased type of guy, but he's a thrasher. Whatever I do, he's thrashing around. Well, I want him to stop thrashing. I want him to stay real clear on what's going on. So then I will bind him with toilet paper. And the agreement is that if that toilet paper breaks, the scene ends and he has to leave. Okay. So, next. Now we're going to talk about a squid gig. S-Q-U-I-D space G-I-G. I'm going to hand it around. Hold it up to light. And it glows in the dark. Why is that important? That's great if you're catching a squid. This is a very nasty thing. I'm going to pass it around. It's very, very, very sharp. Okay? It's got a little handle. It's got these very, very sharp spines that come out from it. So let's say I've got some big, strong guy, and he's face down, naked. And no matter what I do, he's thrashing all over the place, and I can't barely touch him because he's constantly flinging himself this way and that way. I'll lay this in the crack of his ass. And he won't dare lay move a muscle. Pass it around. Is a real what? Yeah. That's where you get them. You buy them online. You know, just Google squid gig. You don't get the ones that are shaped like fish. Just the one that has the plain plastic handle with the spines coming out from the end. They're nasty. Ooh, baby. Okay. So, you know, we could go on and on and on about restraints of all different types, manacles and shackles and all that other stuff. Well, there's tons of that out there. Yeah, so I'm not going to go deep into that. This is more like just an introductory to the concepts. But it's all out there. There's huge amounts of information you can get on those. A lot of guys also, they get too deep into their heads, too deep into logic. They're finding difficulty letting go. That's where we get into sense deprivation. That's where we start doing the blindfolds. That's where we start doing the headphones playing hot erotic music. That's where we start getting them deeper into, say, electrical play, where they don't have any sense of the outside world. All they know is what's happening to them. Okay, that's always very, very nice. If somebody's getting way too caught up in their head, we take them out of their head.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, someone likes that. Good, good. Okay. I can't tell you how many times I've had people saying, where I'll start training somebody, and says, oh, I'm not into pain. Oh, no, no, no pain. Zero pain. Arrah, rah. I said, duly noted. Within a short time, they start complaining at me because, how come these other tops play with me so rough and you won't? Because suddenly they discover just how wonderful it is to be really, really heavily stimulated because they find out that it's not as scary as they thought it was. There's a lot of stereotypes about that. But somebody might really, really dig being stimulated with, say, sting. It could be those little spiny wheels of what are they called? Wartenberg wheel? Wartenberg wheel. I don't think mine's with this, is it? Nah, it's somewhere in the back of the house. Yeah, but it's what the doctors use, the spiny wheel with the handle. And the idea behind it existing is that a doctor who wants to see how much nerve damage you have will roll it down your arm, and then when you say, okay, I don't feel it anymore, then he knows at which point the nerve damage starts. Okay? But it's very handy for people who are very, very, very sensitive and they're restrained in some way. And you've been stimulating them in this way with lots of hardcore, you know, thud, and then you've been stimulating them in a different way with nipping their sides or something, and you discover that they have a really good reaction to that. Well, you get out the Wartenberg wheel, and you start using it on them, especially on the delicate parts, around the nipples, the middle of their lower back, I mean, down just above their butt, on the insides of the arms, on the behind the knee, all the sensitive spots where the skin is thin and lots of nerve endings. Okay? Okay, making sure I'm not losing my focus here. Some people come to me and they demand, I want spanking, 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 spanking. Well, my problem is I'm a lightweight. My hand wears out a lot sooner than most people do. I can dish it out, but I can't take it. So, of course, I've got all sorts of lovely paddles. Any paddles? Yes, yes. Okay. This particular paddle is one of my very favorites because it mimics the same sort of action as your hand, has about the same weight to it. I love it. Guys who like to be spanked really tend to be liking that paddle. Well, what other kind of paddles we got? Any? Probably not. No, it was kind of thin tonight. Yeah. Yeah, didn't bring the Coca-Bolo tonight. Now, the current fashion in paddles that did not exist 30 years ago is exotic woods. These are very important. We've got Coca-Bolo is my favorite. It's a very, very hard South American wood, but it's very dense. You drop it into water, and it sinks to the bottom. Why is that important? Because imagine trying to paddle somebody with balsa wood. You know, it just bounces off, and there's not much interest. But you spank them with this, and it keeps going. And they know that they've been paddled. You can get those everywhere. There's vendors all the time at different stuff. There were vendors at the Leather Realm during Pride that were selling some very good exotic woods.
He's got a huge outfit.
The problem from the vendor standpoint is that the tools that you use to grind wood down to a paddle wear out very quickly because those types of woods are very rough, even on steel and, you know, other type of tools. So that's why they tend to be very expensive, because you have to go through a lot of hardware. Yes?
Just complete leather.
Yes, that is complete leather right there.
What does it feel like?
Well, are you volunteering to find out? Let's do that later, okay?
I'm curious.
All right. That's something that we can talk about later. All right. So, paddling, spanking. If I'm working with somebody, what I do is I never start out at 100. I always show respect, just like somebody getting nipple play. The single worst sin you do with nipple play or with paddling or anything like that is to start out wailing on them. That is probably the biggest failing of bad tops. Bad tops. Okay. Actually, here. Please. Would you stand up for a second? Please. Okay. Come on over here. I'm asking you to volunteer. Actually, yes, ever so politely asking him to volunteer. Now, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate with the paddle. I'm not going to be hitting you hard. I'm merely demonstrating the style.
I had surgery.
All right. Where?
In my butt.
All right. Then you're not the best demo. Great. No. So who would like to volunteer? Oh, there you go. All right. The jacket comes off. We need to be able to see what we're doing. Thank you for telling me. Okay. All right. So what I'm doing here, thank you. What I'm doing here is I'm caressing him. I'm correcting his buttocks. I'm caressing his thighs. I'm admiring the pleasure that I'm getting from this, and I'm letting him know that he's making an old man very happy.
Got a nice bottom off.
Yes. Okay, assume the position. Okay, so what I'm doing is I am gently just patting him with it, just to let him know that it's coming. I'm gently swatting here and there, removing the wallet and putting it somewhere else. It's a cheating thing. We don't allow that, thank you. But anyways, what I'm doing is I'm avoiding hitting him on the tailbone. I'm going only where the muscles are the deepest and the densest. I'm not going to be trying to bruise him in some horrendous way. I'm not letting, well, maybe later once we get better with this. But the intention is to gently let him know that nice things are coming up. But every once in a while, I like to remind him, and then I caress afterwards, and I swat, and I caress afterwards. I'm reassuring him that this is something that I enjoy, and that I'm letting him assimilate what just happened. My intention, stand up please, what I'm doing is that I'm letting him know that this is going to keep going until he, when he drives home, he's going to feel it, especially on hot leather seats. My intention is to hit him right where he sits the hardest. That's the place that I'm aiming for. Boy, that's a nice butt. Wow, I'm liking that. I find myself becoming greatly interested. Thank you so much, love. Okay, let's keep passing it along. Thank you. So anyways, but the same with nipples. Gentlemen, show of hands. How many people here have had somebody, some drunk, come up to them in a bar and apply the equivalent of pliers to their nipples?
Yeah.
And how many of you have liked it? No hands whatsoever. So that's probably about 80% of the guys in the room. So, obviously, we have a lesson to learn here. You start respectfully. All right, you squid giggers. Keep it down. Enough of that giggling over there. Yes, please.
They especially do it if they see a piercing. They assume it's okay right off the bat.
Yeah. And it's the reason why I brought up drunk is that when someone is drunk, the rules change. I can't tell you how many times I have slapped people in a bar. Slapped. To the face. Slapped to the face. I have done that many, many times. The reason why is that one time See, I did karate school and weapons training for 4.5 years. And my reflexes got really good. And one time, a guy bit me so hard on the chest that he actually drew blood. And so I was like, I mean, I thrust him away and I said, you get the fuck out of this bar now. I said, I will really hurt you. You need to go now. He was very drunk, so he left. I'm hurting, I'm stumbling along, and I'm feeling just really not happy about it. And this buddy comes up to me and says, what happened? I said, this guy just bit me. Oh, says, oh, you poor thing. He comes up and he bites me on the other side.
Oh.
And I drew my hand back, and I realized I was about to dislocate his jaw. And I stopped and stood, and I took these 3 fingers, and I slapped him, knocked his glasses across the room, and I said, you are no longer my friend, and you must leave now. And people think it's cute. They think it's funny. They think because I'm dressed in leather that I must be made out of rhino hide and boilerplate, and I'm not. You know, I have nerve endings too, but the people make assumptions about us. It's not okay. Can I leave the... thank you. Thank you so much. So if I start out warming them up, if I get them happy, if I'm getting them more and more, you know, pleased, I have big, hammy hands, which makes it really nice so that I can come up in behind somebody as I'm playing with them, and I can actually touch both nipples at the same time with my fingers outspread with many people, not all. And it's really nice to be able to do that, and I'm getting them more and more excited. They're getting more and more aroused. That's how we warm up the engines, not with the pliers. Okay. Yes, that's how we lose points. Okay, so we're going to talk about edging, milking, and caging. I thought that would get your attention. Pay attention, this will be on the test. A big fad that seems to be a permanent trend is caging, cock caging. You've seen the devices. Goes over the dick so you don't get a hard-on. You can pee in it. It can be locked. It can restrain you. Some people go for the ones with the little spiky things on the inside in case you get a hard-on. There are people who have been to this event who have been damaged by those. I don't recommend them. Permanently damaged. Not okay. It's a nice fantasy. Reality says otherwise. The purpose for cock caging is to force somebody deeper and deeper into bottom space. The way that I describe it is that if somebody is cock caged for about a week, by the end of that, their main sexual organ is their butthole, and they're willing to go along with whatever the hell you want them to do right now, as long as they get some kind of relief. What I like to do is I like to milk them. Not as in make them come, but I'm edging them. I'm playing with their prostate. What I love to do at times, if we're going to a public event and my playmate's IQ has dropped by 80 points because he is entirely thinking with his cunt. And out in the parking lot, as we're getting ready to go into the big public event, we'll be in between two cars. I'll tell him to remain in position. I'll pull some lube that I'll just magically happen and have in my pocket. I'll get my thumb all nice and greasy with some boy butter. Strongly recommended, by the way. Endorsed for the best. And I'll shove it up his ass and just play with his prostate and make him dance on his tippy toes. Okay? But by stimulating his prostate, the purpose of the prostate is to manufacture the fluid that your sperm swims in. But the more it manufactures, the hornier you get because the pressure builds. And since he's not getting any relief, it's getting more and more intense for him. So that the last time I did this to the slave, and then I fucked him, after uncaging him, he tells me that that was the hardest he's come in 36 years. I tend to believe him because it almost hurt when it hit. It was so powerful, okay? And it shot way the hell past me, whatever didn't hit me in the face. It's a really nice, new, trendy thing, and I recommend it strongly to all my favorite friends. I really do. It has its points. Okay? But edging is really nice. See, what this does is it removes choice from the equation. This is very erotic for a lot of people, losing choice. Because we're so busy being logical. We're so busy being careful. We're so busy being worried. We're so busy holding back that to be able to hand it away to somebody else is a huge turn-on. That happens to be my party trick. You know, I like that, taking choice away. So that's why caging is very fun. But it's not healthy for somebody to go for long periods of time without coming. So it should be a rare treat, not an every damn day treat. That's not good serving the needs of the slave or the submissive. Really isn't. So once in a while treat. The drawback to it is that when someone is so heavily endorphinated all the time, then you get a little less efficient.
Yes,
yes. I'm not going to go into detail, but let's just say that the most impeccable and most efficient and most effective personal assistant goes really stupid, you start losing things. It's okay. We've come to terms on that. So the whole thing about electrical play, if you're going to get electrical play material, it's worth investing in the good stuff. Why would somebody do electrical play? It's a great way of endorphinating the hell out of somebody. Because the idea is, and we're not going to go deep into the how and the warnings and all that other stuff. That's a topic for an entirely other time. But being able to get somebody very, very, very stimulated very easily, it's a wonderful, fun thing to do. It's a bit advanced. It's not something I generally do with beginners. I get build them up to that point. But what I love to do with electrical play is to restrain them and then make them thrash around like a tuna on a hook with all sorts of different stimulation where it changes randomly or it changes with the music that's playing and the headphones playing through, you know, and they've got, you know, headphones and, you know, blindfold on. And it's a great way of taking somebody entirely out of their head. It's a lot of fun. But if you're going to get the good stuff. The problem that I've found with the cheap stuff is that, you know, frankly, you could hire butterflies to tickle them and have about the same, you know, effect. And it's just no fun. And you've got to be able to kind of get their attention. Okay. Yes?
Okay. I'm not really sure what we're talking about, but the one that I saw was absolutely frightening, where the guy put a rod through his willy, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like lights on, and that I was like, okay, that will never happen to me.
It didn't.
But obviously there must be, what, something where you just feel a current, or?
Yeah. It's something you have to try. And the next time we do hands-on demo night, I will make sure that we have the necessary equipment so you can try it for yourself. And we won't be putting anything through your willy. But I understand. It's something that's easier experienced than to describe, but just basically, who's had electrical play applied to them?
He might be thinking of sounding.
Yeah, well, that combined with that. Okay, so then, okay, this one here needs to say something. All right, so go for it, Tommy.
Are you meaning like literally like the electrical sounding stuff or the Prince Albert sounding?
No, he literally had a rod stuck down the hole of the urethra of his penis.
What? That's sounding.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the fuck it was.
That is heaven, especially if they hook electrical equipment to it.
Shh, gentlemen.
If they put the sound down and then it's a little device that also goes around your dick and in down your urethra, and then when they hook the electrical equipment up to it, it will make you shoot the rod out when you're coming.
Yeah.
I played around with a guy named Spark Daddy. Oh my God, he is heaven.
That's extreme.
Yeah, it's completely out of your hands type of orgasm,
mm-hmm.
where you're forced to come. It's an interesting concept. So that's very advanced. That's not really within tonight's parameters, but I'm glad that people are sharing it.
Just send some current through and just kind of raise your eyebrow and not, you know, knock you over.
Mm-hmm.
That's later.
Now, if you want to, you know, there's much more advanced stuff that we can talk about, you know, like sleep sacks. We can talk about all sorts of different stuff. But what these things have in common, whatever it is, whether you're using just your, like one thing I love to do is nipping. Yeah, nipping. Specifically, it's like biting, but little bits. So like last night, yeah, there he is, you know, where I'm playing with somebody and I've got him entirely endorphinated and he's really in heaven and I like to change the stimulation. I don't just go boom, 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 boom. There's no creativity to that, and there's no arcing and sparking in the brain. It's just he's enduring it after a while. I change the style. I change the flavor of stimulation. I can be doing flogging. I can do tickling. I can do nipping along the sides, because people are generally very ticklish along the sides. And the nipping, I only do it enough to get a reaction. I don't try to draw blood. I'm not trying to leave marks. I'm just getting his attention with it. I will lick in between, because that changes. Yeah, just like that. I will lick in between. I will blow upon the wet area that I just licked. And not to break any surprises upon anybody, but anybody who has seen me in action, you know I also like taking cold water and dumping it on somebody who's very stimulated back, and they, and the whole crowd watching goes, ah! That's my signature move. I do love that. Yeah. But, I mean, getting back to the whole tickling and biting and nipping, there's also the ripping out hair. I have the, what I call the, he loves me, he loves me not, he's really starting to resent me thing, where, let's say I'm playing with somebody and I've got them really stimulated, their ass is red and, you know, very stimulated and all that. Well, I'll lean over and I'll start pulling out their butt hair with my teeth, you know, and it'll just drive them crazy because it's changing the stimulation. It's making them realize, holy crap, things have changed, I got to pay attention. Because, again, the intention of changing the style is to cause arcing and sparking in the brain. It's causing them to get deeper into being into bottom space. And me to go deeper into top space. And together for us to go into play space. If you're doing it as part of a big, naked, sweaty heap, it's crowd space. Yay! Okay, so then for this next part, I'm going to finish up one particular concept, which is I promised that I would say, yeah, really, that I would say that I'm communicating with somebody on three levels. I never told what the third level was. Oh, I'm a forgetful old man. Okay, level one, that I'm communicating, as I said, logic. I'm talking to his logical mind. I'm using words. Two, I'm communicating with him through touch. And three, pheromones. What's that?
Sorry, what was two?
Two, touch. It's really hard to bullshit somebody if you're touching them in the right way. People trust you more if you're communicating on a deep and meaningful level. Like I said, if I treat somebody remotely and distantly, that may be their thing, it may be my thing, but it's not Tony's style. I'm much more of a relator. I like being able to connect on every level with somebody. But the third level, again, is pheromone. One of the things I forgot to mention in one of the previous talks is that recent science has shown that the reason why some people smell bad to us on a subconscious level is because their genetics are too close to ours. And it's nature's way of making sure that we don't interbreed with somebody who, you know, might cause a deformity, you know, that sort of thing. Seriously. And so that's the current theory. But when somebody's very, you know, there's very attractive to you, and you just really know what the hell the attraction is, it's generally pheromones. And right now, I'm broadcasting pheromones like a fire hose. It's kind of sweaty in here. So, I'm going to open it up for general discussion right now. What I'm going to do is, anything that has been talked about tonight, I would like somebody to go ahead and talk about the reaction, or their thoughts, or observations, or questions, anything like that. We're going to start with you. Yeah.
Excuse me?
I'm just glad it's not me for a change.
It's okay to pinch him. That's part of foreplay, yeah. Want me to come back to you?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so let's go to the shy and demure one here. Yeah, so quiet and so unassuming. Yeah, right. Let's wind him up and set him off. Go for it. Any thoughts, any observations?
I don't know how you feel, man. I didn't see that coming. You're supposed to go the other way. What would you have me say, sir?
Oh, nothing.
Let me put it this way. I've heard several things that sound quite interesting and quite enticing, but I'm so glad I'm the one that gets to do it and receive it. But there are some things that you even piqued my ass spanking curiosity about that I might consider. And I would use my hands until they got tired.
Okay.
But I like the idea of knowing
the whole week, every time I sit down, I would think of you. I thought that was a very sweet touch.
Thank you. I like that. Well, then we will have to set that up. That costs extra, by the way. the first 3 minutes are free. One of the things I forgot to mention that relates to that is marks. Marking. Okay. When I start playing with somebody and they say, I don't want you to leave any marks. You know, my husband's coming home at 4 or whatever. I can respect that, and I'm always very respectful of that. But then again, we get to the point where if somebody does play so intensively that it leaves marks, let's say we use something that's more stingy, or their butt gets a little bruised or something like that, you know, or they're driving home and they're feeling it and they're rolling over in bed and going, oh ho! That is very much of a point of pride. I want to see a show of hands. How many people here have felt that type of pride that you are that kind of a player? Okay, I would like each one of you guys to tell what your experience is of that, starting with Brian.
It's when you're either marked on the back or even little dark spots here from just rough play. It's kind of it's better on the back. And then the butt, it is a reminder. When you sit down, it's like a sunburn and you all of a sudden you have the little shocks and you feel and you remember back to when that happened. Like, at first it's like, what's happening when you sit down in the car? You're like, and then you remember what happened and it's So those are marks that you remember as you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more endorphins, yes, that carries on the experience. Also, what I've discovered is that showing off marks in public is very much a part of it. We'll get back to talking more about that. But Slave, tell us what people did when you were walking around Dory Alley Street Fair a couple of weeks ago.
I got several comments from people talking about how beautiful my back looked. They thought that whoever had done that, I'm trying to think who that was, had done a beautiful job. I have a picture.
You can pass it. You're allowed to pass it around.
That the spacing was gorgeous, and so it was. I was very proud.
And it's amazing. How long did it take for you to heal? You already healed, right?
No, I still got them.
Oh.
Show your back. So it's been a week
it's
and a half.
Staying, but that's still there.
What was that induced by?
Singletail.
Yeah.
Singletail.
Emily, specifically.
Nice.
Yes, yes.
See, he's proud. Peacock.
Oh, yeah.
I am.
Yeah, tell us what you have done at certain points to show it up. Yeah, let's continue showing it.
The first time I got really marked up, I walked around my neighborhood on a bright sunny day with the sun behind me, so my back was nicely lit up, and I made sure that everybody driving down the street saw my back.
Very good, Slay. Thank you. So he's passing around the picture. Yeah, yeah. Try not to zoom through the pictures. You know, come on. These other guys want to see it. Oh, okay. Generally, no.
No.
However, there are people, like, for instance, I have a picture with me of a guy who's back actually has calluses because he's been ripped up so much, you know, and it's a great pleasure to him. And I used to actually fly up to San Francisco on a regular basis to find guys with calluses on their back because they're the only ones that can keep up with me, you know, because there are times where I do need to cut loose.
You know, lost your damn mind. That's what happened.
Uh-huh. Love it. Yes.
Despite what as red as that the picture looks, it doesn't actually cut the skin. I mean, I tend to ooze a little because I'm on a blood thinner, so I get a little bit of. But it's not cutting me, you know. So it's not.
It's just making it very unhappy.
It's, yeah. It knows something happened, but it's not actually cutting me.
So who else had their hand up about getting marked? Okay.
So you marked me quite well here, as a matter of fact.
I believe we have a picture of that.
For the photo shoot.
Yes. Right?
And I asked you to do that scene, and I also said that I had pretty boundaries on that. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful experience. And that lasted probably at least a week. I was pretty happy about that. Like the whole concept that you were saying about leaning back and just going, you know. I would show my friend Antonio, he left for the evening. He's only going to stay about an hour. He's my straight man for that type of play. This is all new to him, and he's the one that gets squeamish over it. And that's why I show him everything, right? And tell him everything. And he's like, ah. I'm like, yeah, but you still look. You still look. And you still respond, and you always want to hear about it. So I'm just saying, right? Whatever you do is your business, but you're not running away from the look, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this one who, that's so beautiful. There's this one who, if I bruise myself and I'm around somebody that likes to do punch play, I'm like, I'll just be talking and he'll go, oh, look, you have a bruise. I'm like, don't be saying shit about that. Don't be saying shit. And what happens, the knuckle comes out right into it, right? I'm like, really, thank you. Thank you for showing the pre-prepared spot to be tortured. Of course, I don't really hate it. It's just,
right.
He always shows me where the bruise is.
Got it. So the point to make about marks and being marked, the reason why it's a point of pride, because it's like a graduation, because you've moved to your next level. You're now more of a heavy player. When I never miss an opportunity that if somebody does get marked up for the first time and they're strutting around showing it off to people at the bar and stuff like that, I say, congratulations, you're now a heavy player. And they're just like, oh, yeah. And so someone else had their hand up? Yes, please.
You can go. Yeah. And I like getting punched in the chest to the point that it'll leave like a bruise or whatnot later. And I like the feeling like being like at work or something the next day. No one can see that it's there, but I'll be in like a meeting or something and feel it. And it just reminds me of that. And I'm not worried about all the stress or whatever that work or the drama that's going on in the meeting. I just have this like secret.
No.
So that's what I like about it.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Well, one of my favorite photos of me is from a Tuesday play night, not just last night, but several times ago, and I'm on that little block thing, and I've got, you know, my shirt's off, and my back's all nice and red, and my pants are pulled down, and my ass is showing, and it's all red and nice, and it's a nice photo. I like that one. That's a nice one. I think that's the first time I tried that one.
Yeah.
That's the one. Hey, I knew you had it.
Who else has been marked up?
I have.
All right, let's hear it.
It was lightly because it was my first couple times, but I had some nice black and blue marks the next day that were pretty awesome to take pictures of and post on Facebook and watch all my friends go, so that was really fun. And what was really great about it was, especially putting them online, is I found out about a lot of people that are a lot more kinky than they let on. So it was kind of, all of a sudden I got all kinds of messages from people who were like, I didn't know. Did you know? No, I didn't know that you were into that either. Oh, cool. Well, we should hang out sometime. So that was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I got a couple people who weren't so thrilled, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, people are going to have their stereotypes. I've had friends that I thought were, like, going to really love me and accept me who'd say, oh, as soon as I found out you're a leather man, I'm never going to speak to you again. And then I'm sure 20 years from then they're going to be the one clanking around in gear, you know. But they have to come to their acceptance at their own rate. So anyway, so what else? Anybody have any thoughts? Yes, okay, here we go.
My question is, you'll only be marked if you're given permission to mark.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So no one's going to mark you just like
walking. No. Anybody that does that's not a good guy. No. One, my observation is that marking is something you have to build up towards. It has to be intentional. It has to be absolutely something that you agree to and that you're ready for and hungry for. That's why I say at least 95% of people will never have anything except a soft flogger because they're simply not interested in anything further. But the ones who are interested are deeply interested, and they're very invested in getting to their next level. And so thank you. That was a very good question. Very nice, because to me, marking somebody up without their permission is a perpetration. Matter of fact, here in this room, I don't know, a few months back, there was somebody who came in as a presenter. Some of you who were there remember this. It was probably the angriest you've ever seen me. I don't tend to let out the anger, but I was like ready to bite somebody. I was so angry. But he came in here and was bragging about doing things against people's will without their permission, branding them, or other things that they did not agree to non-consensually, and I chewed his ass out because I will not have that be something that we consider to be admirable in this group. Anybody who thinks that's good needs to go away, and I will chase them away because that's not what we're about as a culture, not as a tribe. I want people to know that they're not stepping into a bear trap if they approach us. It's very important. I've actually chased several people away from this group within the last few months. There are faces that are missing from among us. The reason why is that as the alpha of the group, I have the right to set the rules. And if somebody gets plenty of warnings and then they don't respect the warnings, they're gone. That's why we tend to have things be so patient and sweet and trustworthy here. Why things don't go wrong and suddenly veer off into disaster. Because somebody has to take full responsibility for the safety, success, and well-being of the space. So thank you for that. That's a very good question. Because that brings up the topic of dungeon masters, DMs. If you're at a big play party, dungeon masters are the ones who are like wearing a vest or something like that. Those are the ones who know CPR, they know first aid, and they're not there to play. They're there to make sure that everything goes well. They're not there to harm anybody's play in any way at all. They're not to harsh the vibes. But if there are rules, they're there to make sure that that happens so that nobody comes to any harm. Okay. I've been to play parties where it's been way restrictive for my taste. Then I don't go to those anymore. I go to different ones. You know, we find our balance. But the point is that if we didn't have somebody doing that, then we get random things happening that other people are very unhappy about, and then everybody leaves. There's no fun in that. We need, as a culture, to have agreements. And that's why I do these talks. What I'm doing is I'm actually imbuing everybody with a philosophy. The difference with our group is I'm bringing back what I remember from the 1970s, which is where we took responsibility for each other, where someone will take someone underneath their wing and treat them really, really, really well and make sure that that young man thrives, and he does it out of the goodness of his heart. He deserves to be rewarded. He deserves to be celebrated. And he deserves to have a lot of love and brotherhood in his life, because that is admirable, respectable, lovable, and honorable in our culture. Other people think that what they really need is distancing mechanism in the form of heavy, 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 heavy gear. Okay, that's fine for other cultures, but it doesn't work. Some people think that's all they can do. It looks like a bunch of samurai warrior armor in a glass case, immobile. You know, I've got pictures of guys in $3,000 leather outfits. They don't interact with anybody else. They're busy in a position in just the right light, showing it off. But it's meant to be back the fuck off. I'm shy, and I'm afraid that you're going to hurt my feelings. And that's a fact. Anybody who tells you otherwise is fucking lying. Heavy, heavy gear is a distancing mechanism if it's used exclusively. The pendulum has to swing. That's what we do in this group. We do the heavy gear. We do the heavy play. We do the gentle stuff. We do the playful stuff. We do the affectionate hugs. We do the full range of experience of men. We can savor the deep intimacy because we've already done the work to find trust with each other. This is not optional. This is what our culture is about. That's really what I'm teaching underneath all this stuff. When I'm talking about technique, when I'm talking about toys, when I'm talking about the different stuff that we do, and I'm going down the list, what's really underneath it is we got to find reasons to trust each other, to love each other, to treasure each other, to have crowd space, which is what you experienced at the beginning of this and during the break and what you'll be experiencing afterwards, where everybody's glad. Someone who just sits as a fly on the wall and they observe, what they see is gladness. That is the thing we've needed more than anything else, is to rejoice, to see each other. You know, like I'm always bringing up the topic of the TV series Cheers. When Norm walks in, everybody goes, "Norm!" Well, every fucking man in this room deserves to be Norm. To be glad that you showed up, and everybody glad that you showed up, because we like you the way you are. Now, flaws and all. That's why I'm saying this, that in order for us to get to the example that you brought up, and that's what really twisted my crank and got me going on this rant. The reason why we don't have people who do random, unexpected, unwanted things is because that's not how it works when it works well. Somebody wants to do that, we're all going to pivot around and point and say, that's the man, officer, arrest him. That's why they tend not to hang out with us. Like I said, so, you know, that's, I'm real strict about that. Now, on a similar topic, things are going to be changing radically with this group starting September the 1st. I'll give you a little bit of a preview. I've seen the proposals. It's all good stuff. Think of it as shifting into the next phase. Think of it as crowdsourcing in a big way. This isn't my first time at the rodeo. I've created many affinity groups, successful ones. I've had a few failures. I was there at the beginning of Bears San Diego. I helped set up their bylaws and the philosophy of the group. I've created multiple car clubs. I've created all sorts of different leather groups. I've created different affinity groups in many different directions. And frankly, it takes a team of about 12 people to replace me. That's just a fact. I'm really good at innovating, but I'm shitty at maintaining. But the philosophy continues. I will not be going away. I'll still be, you know, the guy off in the ivory tower still thinking of, you know, deep thoughts, you know, pulling my gray beard and, you know, pondering the future and, you know, studying the stars. I'm still going to be that guy. The difference is that I'm handing away the handlebars. I'm handing away the steering wheel. I'm letting people who deserve to be champions and leaders be champions and leaders. I'm letting them make decisions. It's no longer just the Tony show. If it was the Tony show, then it would die the moment that I stopped doing things. I'm here to make sure that that's not going to happen. I'm going to make sure that as everybody moves into the future, it's to everyone's satisfaction. It's not going to suddenly veer off into disaster, because these are all people that I've personally coached. These are all people that I believe in. These are people that I spotted their talents early on. This is like going to be the easiest transition in the world, because we're going to be rearranging the calendar. I say we, but I mean everybody. See, when I first started this group, this is off topic, but when have that ever stopped me? When I started the group, nothing was going on. We didn't know how to find each other. We had no way. We were all stuck out in the internet. And if someone's on, man, you know, AOL, Men for Men, God forbid, from, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a bad example. Let's just say Daddy Hunt versus somebody else on Adam for Adam versus somebody else on whatever. They had no connection to each other. And there was no way. And none of those things brought us together as physical beings close together unless on a crotch level. We needed more than just a crotch level. We can get sex. It's everywhere. What we need is commonality. What we need is interrelatedness. What we need is hugs and pheromones and being able to use our bullshit detectors and see when people are being authentic and say, okay, I'm going to trust him. I want to play with him. I think he would add value to my life. Well, you can't do that from, like I said, from a grinder type app or something like that. Yes, Brian.
And to go to that point, this group is... A lot of people have shared, say they really enjoy the group and the community. But I was this weekend in Palm Springs, a guy that doesn't know most of us, I know him. He listens to this, the speech, the group sessions, and he wishes so much he had something like that to go to. It's 2 hours, but yeah, no, he would love to have a group like this in Palm Springs. So I was very surprised to hear that. They have DFA. Yeah. He belongs to that, but he's just not real happy. Their groups, I guess, isn't going. He likes this one, and he does listen to it. So, okay. And then on the marking bit, I was just going to say, it reminded me, especially with you said the Dungeon Masters in Dory Alley, mm-hmm. back up there by the Club 15 where the
15
demos
Association. Yes.
So after you guys were done, somebody else was getting single tailed in the marks, and there was 4 or 5 medics. They weren't stepping in, but they were watching. And there was probably like I was considering them the Dungeon Master, but I think there was actually a dungeon, somebody kind of watching the scene, flagging. And he was enjoying himself. They were making sure that the guy on the cross was enjoying himself and the flagger, but they were getting a little bit leery of the blood, but it kept going for a while until it was just this felt a little uncomfortable. And the medics, they never interrupted, but they were there.
And, monitoring, yes.
Yes. They were a little, you know, I think they were a little surprised. Yes. They should have been, but they have to watch out for safety, I guess.
And if someone's an unknown surgeon, just like I would be. You know, I mean, just if somebody new shows up and starts doing more hardcore stuff, we're all going to be like saying, there's this opposer, or is this somebody who thinks that force is needed as opposed to when you have strength, you don't need to use force. It's a big distinction. But if somebody shows up and they think that being a bully is the way to be, then we're all going to get very wary and everybody's going to start. What I've discovered is if the guy doing the aggressive, inappropriate behavior is on one side of the bar and I'm on the other side, suddenly 95% of the people in the bar are clustered around me. You know, protect us, Dad. Yes.
I just wanted to expound on kind of the opposite perspective of that. So for people, I don't want people to be too overwhelmed by the concept of that much. I don't want to associate what he's describing with violence. Okay. So the point is what you're experiencing and what you get out of it, not how you get there. Right. So, and I've had to learn this recently because the most torturous thing you can do to me is nothing. So it's a joke in the group I'm with. If you really want to torture Patrick, you go like that. I'm hurting you by not hurting you. That's the joke, and it drives me crazy, right? And it will, after a while, drive me crazy. But what happened, and I had to learn from this, was, I didn't think I was learning, but I did, was just if you do the breastbone, there's no meat, and all you're doing is working the skin, right? And it was a joke at first, and it was like, you do this for like an hour, what do you think is going to happen, right? So I ended up with like this 2x2 bruise. It was beautiful. But it didn't feel like anything until the next night when anybody at all could come up and go, and I'm going, So the joke was, you want to torture him by doing nothing? Yeah, try that, right? Anybody, and it was great though, I loved it because it taught me to just trust that I'm going to get where I want to go and it doesn't have to be the exhibition, it doesn't have to be the big show, it doesn't have to be the whole thing. I got what I wanted. I was like a little nickel candy dispenser.
Well, nice.
It was great.
Well, this is a terrible thing to perpetrate on somebody, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to lick my finger. I'm going to touch him right in between the eyebrows. And I don't want you to think about that spot.
Okay.
So what happens with somebody like that is that it's all they can think of at that point by doing that. You know, it's a great way to do a mind fuck because you touch them there, right in between the eyebrows, and after a while it feels like it's driving a drill right in between your eyes. It's a very interesting thought. I don't think I got it wet enough. I'm a little dried out here. Yeah, here, let's... here, hold still. I'm not looking for that reaction at that. I was just demonstrating. So anyway, so ranting aside, again, I'd like to make the distinction that there are plenty of people out there who are not only looking to administer force, but also who are looking to receive it. I tend not to hang out with that crowd. I tend to creep that crowd out because I'm way too gushy, I'm way too liberal, I'm way too affectionate and silly and childlike and playful and too much of a sweetie. And they think I'm creepy, and that's okay. You know, I don't disdain people who are going to repeat what their parents taught them about abuse and for the ones who hunger for it. Well, hello there, you snuck right in, didn't you? Good to see you. And yet, that tends not to be my crowd. Starting September 1st, you're probably going to get to meet some of those people as speakers because we need to hear from them. We need to know that maybe there's somebody here in this room would like to know more about that. And if we're not, and if it's coming from me, it's not going to happen. But if we have other people enrolling other people to come in and talk on more severe type discussions, we need to hear from them too. It's a valid viewpoint. It's not mine, but agreement with me is not the cost of my friendship or respect. I'm not going to be that much of a dick about it. I'm really not. I'm open to possibility. So let's talk about what's coming up. We have multiple things happening. Next week, the topic is going for the gold, reaching ecstasy without drugs. Okay. Then after that, then we've got 30 years worth of experience on achieving wonderful sexual pleasure. given by a wonderful new guest speaker. He's starting to become very active with our group. He's taking the night off from work in order to come in and give a talk. He's a wonderful man. I'll be doing the big write-up this week in the newsletter. The week after that, the topic is forbidden orgasms, where we talk about stuff that we're not supposed to talk about. Barebacking, bug chasing, drugs, brown hankies, fill in the blank, dot, dot, dot. Well, we're going to talk about those things. It's just time to have that talk. We're going to have other things happening coming up. A lot of things are going to be changing. We're going to be changing venues. We're going to be changing the calendar around. It's going to be a big team effort. Everybody's feedback is welcome. Everyone is welcome to have, you know, input to anything that's coming up. It's wide open. For my part, I'm going to continue doing stuff on the edges. I'm going to be out there doing the pioneer work. The way that I phrase it is that I dance on the tip of the wave of change. Our next big flog swarm is coming up in September. I'll have more details about that. Anybody here, show of hands, who does not know what a flog swarm is? Okay, I'm glad that I said that. Okay, when I said, when there is a large, large basis for commonality and trust in a group, such as you're seeing around here, when we all have good reasons to like each other and to feel like we can trust. I've already alluded to it. Well, now I'm going to explain the concept of crowd space. So, I'm going to have Slave come on up. John, come on up. Okay. You're the St. Andrew's Cross, and John is the Flog E. So, Bob is holding John and keeping him stable. Okay. I'm the third person. I'm going to be flogging John. The three of us like each other. The three of us are connected on a very good level. Then you take that trio and you multiply it as many times as you want in a circular shape. So that, let's say we got eight trios. And the people in the middle are the ones who are close to each other. They're touching. They're in physical proximity. And the guys doing the flogging are doing it with the beat of the music. So the energy is vibrating through the whole crowd. Fa-voom-pa, fa-voom-pa, fa-voom-pa. And everybody's touching. And it's the same energy happening to everybody at the same time. And it takes you way, way to a whole new level. Show of hands. Thank you, gentlemen. Show of hands. How many people here have been part of that? Raise your hand. All right. Who would like to say something about it? For the people who are new. Anything you want to say? Door die. It's okay. How about you?
Yeah, it was my second time getting flogged, and it was cool.
So it's kind of a high standard, doesn't it?
Yeah. The first time was by you, and strange to say that it was much more intimate and boundary crashing than I realized, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you. Who else? Show of hands. Who else? Yeah. Okay, Brian.
I was holding a person with getting flogged, and you could actually feel it by just holding them. So it was, you know, I wasn't being flogged; I was holding them, and you could feel it come right through.
But what was your mental space at the time? Were you bored? Were you thinking about tomorrow's laundry? What were you thinking?
No, I was in the moment, so it was a good feeling.
You felt very connected. Who else?
I'm just going to keep ranting about this, but I was Damien's flogging bottom. And so, yeah, he did just fine. Trust me. He just kept asking, where are you? How are we doing? I'm like, beautiful. Just don't stop. That's all I can tell you. Don't stop. It was really... what I really, really liked, and I had never done that before, was having the human cross to hang on to. And it changed the whole paradigm of the experience because I was interacting with that person. They were interacting with me, and we were both feeling the experience. It was really... It just magnified it. It was great.
Very good. Thank you. How about you, Jay?
Let's see. To add to that, I actually got to experience it from two different angles that particular night. I was one of the flogging tops, and I was flogging my boy, and one of the guys that we met here, he was Cross. I didn't know him before then, but at that particular moment, there was, again, a connection. there was a power exchange that went through the three of us, and afterwards we all just kind of like, you know, just kind of mangled together and stuff. Later on that night, Sebastian actually flogged Alan with the beaver pelt, and I was holding him. So the beaver pelt just went right through him to me. And if anything, I needed the aftercare versus Alan. because I actually haven't been flogged for 4 years. So that's a different experience for me because I'm usually on the other side. And then during Pride, we did the same thing again. And again, I need more aftercare than he did. So there's a level of power exchange that just can't be explained. It is everyone is in the zone, whether you're the cross, whether you're the sub, or whether you're the actual top. And it's just a mind-blowing experience. That's the best way I can describe it. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you very much. How about you?
It was a very great experience. I like having the human cross holding me. But it wasn't even just the fact that the three of us had this thing going on, but I could feel the people on either side as well. So, you know, it was like all around me. So it was a very nice experience. I enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was warm. I just felt part of the group. I think those emails around me about the group, I felt I was connected to everyone in the group. It was a unique experience. I've never done that before.
There's more coming.
And I, at the time, I was so involved in my head, just the person I was with, that I sat back, when you came in, I sat back, I thought, oh, I should have been looking at everyone else, because six of the eight people were in sync, and that looked so hot.
Yeah.
So I should have been paying attention, but I was, like, really...
More of them would have been in sync if it hadn't been so horrifically noisy in the bar. It was so loud that when I was trying to coordinate it, I was screaming as hard as I could into people's ears, and they still couldn't understand me. That's how loud it was. It really takes away the pleasure of being able to relate with other people if they can't understand what you're trying to tell them. Okay? Okay. But what you're seeing is a lot of people extremely, extremely happy. It's what you've already seen at the beginning and during the break, and what you'll see after this, but with the dial turned way up. So what we're going to be doing, again, what we're planning, is that the Pilates studio over in Hillcrest is going to be where we're going to have the next one. I wanted to have it out east in La Mesa, but Scott and Doran must be on vacation or something because they have not been answering my messages, and we need to get the plans together. So we're going to be doing it in a space that's about twice the size of this one. We're going to have drummers. We're going to have sage burning. We're going to be having huge amounts of very interesting things happening all simultaneously, and we're going to go to a certain point and pause so everybody can switch positions if they want to. So everybody gets to experience it from whatever direction they want, and we're going to keep doing that. It's going to be not just that. It's going to be a lot of other stuff. It's going to be a full weekend of what we do during the hands-on demos. The reason why I call it junior high is because we need to start fresh. If anything we need as a culture is to start like beginners again, where it's okay to be clumsy. It's okay to do it awkwardly. That people aren't going to make fun of you. Oh, did you see that? We're so tired of the pressure, the gun to the head. You got to do it perfect or don't fucking try. And that's crippling for us as a culture. It's time for us to let go of that and be happy with each other the way that we are and to grow and to learn, because the advantage of doing these training sessions, these junior high experiences, is when it comes time for the flog swarm, we already love each other. We already trust each other. We already believe in each other. We already welcome each other and really care about each other's success and well-being. And as a consequence, that takes the energy way, way beyond anything you've ever seen. And there is not a single man in this room who is not worthy of that much ecstasy and joy. And as a community, we can take it to that level every damn time with no trouble whatsoever. It's that easy. And so we're going to be doing that. We're probably going to do it regularly since we've got a nice space for it. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff that is meant to break down whatever little walls there are left in us. Because as a culture, we need to be healthy. And in order to be healthy, we have to find reasons to love each other and to accept each other. If you want to be a, if you want to have a brother, be a brother. That's what this is really truly about. That we drop the fucking expectations, the prejudices, the biases, the noise in our heads, you know, our little rackets that we pull whenever we want to try and get attention from other people. Well, what if we don't have to anymore? We can just be ourselves. So that's what really where we're going with this. That's the direction I'm going to be doing what I'm going to be doing. The maintenance of the group, the planning for the group, that's going to be handed away. But I'm still going to be doing my stuff. I'm still going to be exciting myself and others through the work that I'm going to be doing. I'm still going to be pioneering. I'm still going to be finding reasons for us to really connect on every possible level, because that is our superpower in this community. This is what other cities are starved for. I mean, if any of our young leaders shows up in another city, they get swarmed. Jay, have you done any traveling to other cities and identified yourself as being from San Diego? Not yet. Well, when, if and when you do that, you're going to find that people are going to leap upon you like puppies, saying, tell us, how are you doing it? How are you doing it? Because that's the experience that a lot of our young leaders are having when they travel to these other cities. So having said that, gentlemen, do we have any further comments, any thoughts? We've covered a lot tonight. It's been very light, but it's been a lot.
Tony, I have a quick question.
Certainly.
The endorphins that you mentioned, I run quite a bit, and I get an endorphin rush.
Natural
after
high.
That. Is
Oh, yeah. Same.
Same. Yeah.
It just, it's damn quick this way. See, running, how many miles does it take you to get there?
It takes an hour before. Yeah.
Right. Versus 5 minutes will do it. It's just a quickie way to get to the same place. Yeah, when I'm mountain climbing, same thing happens to me. I'm dancing, oh baby. All right, any other thoughts, any other questions?
I just wanted to say it's funny how you can just be watching and observing and get the endorphin rush just from observing. When I worked in the leather realm and was in the tent where they were doing all the demos, I ended up with a sub drop at the end of the day after watching that happen and getting so excited for so many hours of watching that occur. And that whole tent was, it was like electricity in that tent. And it's, even if you go and just watch, if you're not ready to get, you know, get flogged or participate, it, you can still get something really cool out of it just from that.
Good point. Thank you. I like that because the slave and I had something similar to that happen recently. I recently endorsed the purchase of a new toy that I had helped design and helped get manufactured. And in order for people to get the full experience, I made instructional videos with the slave. And what was interesting is when I'd make the videos, then I would then show them to the slave at the exact same point where he's going, in the video, he's doing it as he's watching, as getting more and more wet. Yeah, that, I found that to be doubly satisfying from a top standpoint. Yeah? Something you'd care to share?
I just said I was reliving it. I felt it all again.
Oh, yeah. It's good stuff. So, gentlemen, they're talking about shifting the discussion portion to twice a month instead of four times a month or four or five. I'm not sure exactly what the exact plan will be. You guys will be kept apprised as more plans become known. It's all up in the air. It's all loosey-goosey. If you'd like to be part of that, if you want to give feedback, we will be announcing a upcoming general discussion, aren't we? Is there something coming up where we can invite people to come and give their feedback? Very good. I need to know when so I can start announcing that. Because if you have strong opinions on any topic, we want to hear from you. This is crowdsourced. Everyone has a stake in the success of this group. Why not? Come forth and give your opinion. You don't have to be the guy with the steering wheel in your hands, but you can certainly give your viewpoints and say, I don't agree with that. It's okay. This is not a pass or fail. This is not a everybody has to agree. No, this is everybody has a chance to steer how things go in the future. The reason why I'm stepping back as I am is because if I keep in the forefront all the time, then I'm sucking up all the oxygen in the room and denying these new champions their chance to build up their own gravitas, their own public goodwill as people. If I'm constantly grabbing the spotlight, I'm robbing them of the experience. And that's a natural progression. So that's why we're doing this. It's a wonderful growth process. It's something I welcome. It's something I'm very serene about. And let's all play. So thank you, gentlemen, and have a lovely evening.